So today we head into sort of the last part of the class, since there's only today and Dead Week left. That means we've got 4 lectures total. The last one is a review and summary, so that means 3 lectures of new material. Today I want to talk about Google Earth. It's been something we've sort of touched on several times over the course of the quarter. We haven't really devoted any bit of the class to it yet. As you'll see, it's an extraordinary tool, but it has a unique history. And it helps if you know a little bit about that history before you go on and start playing with it. Where's my slide clicker? Guess it's warped. Somebody's got it in their pocket. Okay, let's do this. So what is Google Earth? Well, if you go to Mike Jones, the chief technologist, and this is some years ago now when I had dinner with him, and he said, we are like an iPod for Earth images. So the important thing to realize here is that you often hear this expression, well, I saw it on a Google Earth satellite image. You didn't see it on a Google Earth satellite image because Google doesn't own any satellites, or at least not that I know of. But it does handle satellite information, and it leases its right. It takes a license to different companies that do produce satellite data, and it serves the role of the iPod. It makes it playable, it sort of fuses it together and lets you have playlists and all these sorts of things. So the intent was not to collect data. They started by taking every bit of free data they could find and loading it in, and that was a pretty good start, and they've moved on since there. But let's probe a little bit deeper into the history. So look at Google Earth as a history. And funnily enough, it begins with Al Gore, perhaps one of the inventors of the internet. Al Gore represented Tennessee in the United States Senate from 1985 to 1992. He was Vice President of the United States from 1993 to 2001. And during his period in the Senate, he served on an extremely important committee. That's the the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, probably one of the most influential and powerful committees in Washington. This, just to give it some context, we had the Dayton Peace Agreements ending the war in Bosnia in 1995. And what happened here? Why were they the Dayton Peace Agreements? Why were they taking place on a remote Air Force base, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio? Well, this was the only place where the Air Force had set up a complete virtual reality imaging space, where data could be brought together and convened under software control. And they, in fact, did bring all the key people involved in the war in Bosnia-Herzegovina into this limited space. It was actually in a warehouse. And then simply showed them what the consequences would be for drawing particular peace boundaries or setting up and partitioning the nation at different places. So you might say this is a computer graphics solution to a war. And this happened during this era, while this piece of software was under creation. So Google was only founded in 1998. Many people think it's a lot older than that. It's not that old. And in 2002, the market was hit by something called Keyhole Earth Viewer. This is actually what it looked like. This is a screen snap that Mike Goodchild saved. And Keyhole Earth Viewer was funded by something called InQtel. I'll talk about that in just a second. But it was one of the first projects under the government's so-called dual-use program, whereby things that had been developed for the intelligence and the military arena were being pushed into the commercial sector to develop new markets and new products. So you might say that Facebook and all the social networking software has similar origins. Certainly, Keyhole Earth Viewer was indeed that. Keyhole, funnily enough, that name sort of rings a bell. Remember the KH cameras from the spy satellites talked about last time? KH stands for Keyhole, and the keyhole was space reconnaissance, secret space reconnaissance. So it sort of tells you what that name might have meant at the time. Well, Google saw the opportunity. They bought Keyhole in October of 2004. At the same time, they were exploring something called Google Maps Local. This was in 2005. Which became Google Maps. Then they released Google Earth, which was simply their version, the Keyhole with their front end on it, in June of 2005. And from then on, it's just been one of these, you know, up ramps in terms of acceptability. Google Earth Community was added in 2005, the same year, 2005. Google Earth Community, extremely important component of Google Earth. 2006, they formed a partnership with National Geographic, so the content and the photographs from National Geographic magazine are now all geo-referenced inside Google Earth. You can access them. And I just checked today, Google is celebrating, oh, I got the wrong date, it should be November 2011. Google is celebrating 1 billion downloads of Google Earth. So how many people on the planet now? About 7 billion. So 1 in 7 people in the entire world have downloaded Google Earth. That's a lot. Just in case you have any doubts about what InQtel is or where Google Earth came from, here's a quote from Senator Graham, chairman of the Select Senate Committee on Intelligence, in the 2002 year fiscal authorization. And I'll put it in the middle. Such as the CIA's InQtel. InQtel is a venture capital fund largely funded by the intelligence community to stimulate new technologies through private sector entrepreneurs. And Google Earth, or at least Keyhole, was one of the sort of flagship initial products to be brought to market in this guise. So if Google tells you they developed it all, don't believe them. What is Google Earth today? Well, it's a viewer, and this viewer can be downloaded for free. I've never seen it take more than 2 or 3 minutes to download, and it, generally speaking, will install on pretty much anything. It will also run as a web service on the server end, so that just means all you need is a web browser, and you run the software elsewhere, and it'll run under DirectX or OpenGL. It's also an API, or an application development interface, programming interface, which is open for developers, which means that you can write software tools that do things with Google Earth and then plug them straight into Google Earth, or even write entire systems that draw upon Google Earth's resources. There have been an enormous number of add-ons. I'm going to cover in depth today Google SketchUp, but there are lots more besides. And then we go into how Google funds itself, or how it funds Google Earth. So if you're willing to spend about $20, I didn't check the latest price, but it's not much more. Google Earth Plus is an optional upgrade which allows you to plug your GPS device directly into it and download data, and the ability to import spreadsheets, some drawing tools, and higher resolution display and printing, so, which is kind of nice, especially if you want to use the images for something you're doing outdoors. And then for professional and commercial users, Google Earth Pro is the whole nine yards. It's $400, and it includes all sorts of stuff around local collaboration and so on. So this is this is their business model. And then we have Google Maps. I'll mention this because the two are becoming increasingly tied. In fact, much of the Google Maps functionality is now available inside Google Earth, and not quite yet vice versa. Some of the things new to Google Maps: real-time traffic for almost most major U.S. cities. The L.A. traffic fortunately extends out as far as Santa Barbara, so you can see the traffic all the way from here to LAX in advance on Google Maps just by turning on the traffic. Detailed directions, we've gone over that when we talked about navigation. Integrated search results is what's left of Google Local. It means when you're searching for a car repair shop, the car repair shops that are closest to you geographically will start appearing in your search list rather than just appearing at random or by frequency of being hit. Easily modifiable, simple user interfaces, including Google My Maps, that allows you to set up a server-side application that contains your map. So if you wanted to shade in every country you've ever visited or put a dot on the map to show where your friends lived, you can certainly do that and then publish it back to the internet. Google My Maps really came to its own during the Santa Barbara fires a few years back and during the San Diego fires a year earlier than that, when the Google My Maps was set up for people reporting when they were being evacuated or when their houses were on fire, and the Google My Maps became more up-to-date and more reliable than the maps that were coming from the emergency services. So this was a real transition point in terms of volunteered geographic information. Really remarkable satellite imagery, in many cases quite high resolution. And Google Street View, I don't have to tell you what that is. I will tell you what it is. In fact, it's part of the lecture. So Google Street View was one of the recent additions to it. I happened to be taking a hike in southern England with Mike Goodchild and a couple other colleagues from the UK. And by complete fluke, there it was. The Google car drove by. So what is the Google car? It's got stickers all over it. There are many of them, obviously. And a post sticking up the top, And on top of the post is a whole array of cameras taking pictures in all directions simultaneously. So for every for distance is controlled by the GPS that's on board. Every 10 or 15 feet drives along the road, click, the cameras all shoot again, and all that data gets geo-referenced and then placed into Google Street View. They do some processing of the imagery. They go through and obscure everybody's face when you can see an individual's face. They obscure license plates, so you can't read the license plate, but that's pretty much all they do. Otherwise, they post the imagery directly. So for about a year, I waited to see if my photograph holding a camera like that was going to appear on Google Street View, and they finally just posted it, but they missed me. They must have come by on a different day. That's where exactly where I was standing across the street, and the cameraman must not have been on that day, which is very unfortunate. Okay. The blogosphere is caught up with Google Earth, and as far as I can tell, there's a strange group of people, and I don't know who they are, but they're out there, obviously. They've been recently been named map heads that must spend their entire spare time browsing around in Google Earth looking for things of interest, and they find them on a regular basis. They're all over the place. So I don't have to talk about the famous British crop circles. Most of those were originally found, and in fact, you could argue they were actually done just because they'd be visible on Google Earth. On the view of Manhattan on the lower right is one of my favorites. When you piece two overhead images together with different radial displacement, you have to seam them somewhere. It's probably best not to have the seam run right past the Empire State Building, but there indeed it does. Here's the Hollywood sign. Here's the famous swastika building. And I don't even know where that is, but people got obsessed with finding swastikas with Google Earth, and in fact they actually found a project that had been done in Germany during the war years, when they planted a species of trees in the middle of the forest to make a symbol of a swastika, so that when the trees flowered and came out with different color leaves, the swastika would be visible from the air. In fact, they've since cut those trees down, probably the only thing that could have been done. And then people love to find shipwrecks, plane wrecks, car wrecks, you name it. They're all over the place. Tanks in the desert, wrecked, all sorts. So people love to find things in flight. So people scan, say, half the Atlantic Ocean trying to find an airliner in the mid-air. Here's somebody who found a glider coming into land somewhere in the UK. I see these all over the place. Particularly good are people that want to find ships and ship tracks, and they're very good at finding them out in the middle of nowhere. Google SketchUp is it's kind of an add-on to Google Earth. It was originally a standalone company that made three-dimensional design software, and Google bought them out and posted it sort of public domain free download. Obviously, you can buy an upgraded version. This was to support constructing three-dimensional objects that could then be placed into Google's Google Earth. So there was a demand for people to actually create 3D renderings of buildings and be able to post them into what's called the Google Earth Warehouse, which is a sort of warehouse of three-dimensional objects that pop up when you turn on the 3D option inside Google Earth. So SketchUp is so simple to use, it's just unbelievable. That I challenge anybody, to take longer than 5 minutes to become fluent with it. It's really very, very easy. So you basically start with an object, you can draw it up to a particular height, or you could draw a footprint of a building and then just simply extrude it and then put a roof on it and put a chimney here. And then you can map all sorts of different textures and colors to the sides. And when I tried it out this morning just to see what was new, you can actually now pop up a second window, go to anywhere else within Street View, freeze that piece of the view, and pop it onto your three-dimensional model. So if you had your house rendered in Street View, you could actually get the picture of your house and start putting it on a 3D rendering of your house. Once you've done these models, you can accommodate them to the terrain underneath them, because the construction is done on a flat surface. But of course, the terrain varies underneath. We can turn on terrain and then adjust it so that it's actually sitting on the ground, not hovering above the terrain as they sometimes are. And then when you're ready, you can simply publish your model out to the rest of the world, either as a KM L or KMZ file, the two XML formats that Google Earth supports, or you can apply to have your model checked into the Google warehouse of three-dimensional models. So I really do recommend fooling around with this. It's quite a lot of fun. Of course, people have been at it for years now, building all sorts of elaborate models. So here is the old opera house in Frankfurt. And I love this one because it's got the most elaborate things like the horse on the top of the building and so on, but then all the stuff on the ground, all the fountains and the street cars and so on are all flat because they're on the orthophoto photograph base. They haven't been extruded and made into three-dimensional objects, just the opera house itself. But the level of detail, as you can see in the object, can be quite amazing. One thing you can do when you're making these models is if you've got windows that all look the same, then you only need one picture of the window and just clone it and make multiple copies of the same window. So as you see, the exact same pattern is looking out of every one of the bottom floor windows. That's because it's exactly the same picture done over and over again. You can get your name on works of art that you've created, like this rendering of Tower Bridge, excuse me, in London, by René Almer. And again, take it from me, the buildings across the other side are not flat on the ground. They do have three-dimensional structure. In fact, you can see the 2D rendering of the bridge underneath the 3D rendering of the bridge. You, too, can be the first person on your block to have your house enter three dimensions. I'll give you a good example. An instance that I've used many times is that somebody was at a planning meeting. This was actually in North Carolina. At the planning meeting, they were handing out 8.5 by 11 copies of the blueprints of a proposed building. And that person simply took that home, scanned it, brought it into SketchUp, made the building the correct height and where it was going to be, placed it into the virtual environment, and then emailed all their friends to tell them to download that KMZ file and have a look at that from their house and see whether or not they could see it within the topography. So this is an immensely valuable tool for sort of group decision-making and common sharing of virtual environments. Now, for some years now, Geography 176C, the advanced GIS class that happens every spring, has been working on slowly rendering our campus into three dimensions, bit by bit, and we have. It's been in several rounds. Each new building is completed, it's submitted to the Google Warehouse Certification Committee. Sometimes this takes up to 6 months for them to be re-rendered. Sometimes the files are too big and they have to be shrunk down. So Harold Frank Hall and all the surrounding buildings, in fact, most of the buildings on this side of the campus are already there. As you see, some of them are not, as the building just across the way that's good and flat, it hasn't gained its three-dimensional form yet, but the local topography is there, and as you can see, objects beginning to pop up within Google Earth, within the rendering. Okay, I mentioned KML and KMZ. XML, or the extendable markup language, is the sort of extension, it's the next generation from HTML, the hypertext protocol language, that really gave us the internet, that allows you to format initially two-dimensional pages on the internet to include graphics and text and links and so on. XML supports a good deal more than that, and indeed it supports two-dimensional, three-dimensional viewing and animation, as we saw a couple weeks ago, or last week. KML, or the keyhole markup language, that's a bit of legacy, was the first version of XML that was supported in Google Earth. And as you can see, it uses an HTTP-type protocol. So we begin by simply opening a bracket, question mark, and we say this is XML, and we give the version. We then say that what follows is going to be in KML, and you see at the bottom here, slash KML, it simply says it's no longer KML after that point. And we include a simple place mark. We include a web reference to find where the language description is. We put in some text to describe a location, and then comes the critical part. We say point, coordinates, and then what clearly looks like a longitude followed by a latitude to a ridiculous number of decimal places, given that how accurately this is going to be placed, The zero at the end means zero. It's at sea level, or it's at datum height at that particular location. Slash coordinates means this is the end of the port coordinates. Slash point means that this is the end of the point definition. Slash place mark says I've now finished defining the place. And this is now recognized. If we go to Google Earth and read this file in, we just put it in the text editor, that particular location will get a place mark at it, which right now in, I think Google is using yellow push pins as the placeholders by default. So I in fact did that for Harold Frank Hall, so you could see where the class was and attach that to the class web page. Okay, I'm going to hold this screen for a minute because I've got some cool things to show you as far as Google Earth is concerned, and I'll put this on the website so you can go to these locations and see them. But I want to just spend a couple of minutes actually demonstrating how Google Earth works. So I've got it pre-installed in here, but if you just go to earth.google.com, you'll find where it says download, and you just download and click install. By default, we end up with a point directly over the United States, and there's even been blog entries on, if you now just hit zoom, where do you actually end up? Well, apparently you end up in a parking lot outside the office where one of the original pioneers of Google Earth used to work, in Kansas somewhere, I think. Basically, we've got tools for moving around, that we have location information down here that scrolls as long as we're somewhere within the Earth and visible. We've got a whole series of navigation tools up here that don't pop into play until we see them. So this one moves everything up and down, and also allows us to rotate. This one allows us to scroll around to rotate the Earth. This one allows us to zoom in and out at any given location, or we can move the slider up and down and do the same thing. We want to go back, we just hit that little eye right there. Over on this side, we've got a search window, so if I want to search for a particular place, let's say Isla Vista, California, I can hit that. It says, do I mean Isla Vista, Santa Barbara, California? I say yes. And now we go into a fly mode and rotate and move right into, fortunately enough, Isla Vista. You notice the levels coming in? So now we've loaded beyond the zoom level. Each time we're doing a progressive zoom, so each time we're getting the next level of detail appearing as the network, which is a bit slow in here, catches up with where I am. And here we are at Isla Vista. Okay, places where I've been, and nearby places and even advertisements appear within this window here. Over here is a place, these are my places, there's a place called Places over here, which is includes things like sightseeing tours of the world that I can take if I want to, where I go place to place, or I can set up my own tour of places, perhaps driving along Highway 5 or whatever. Down here at the bottom here, we have a set of menus that we can click on and off. These represent that community bulletin board I was talking about a little earlier. So we have a primary database, click that off and pretty much everything disappears. We have labels and borders, that puts exactly what you'd expect on here. Places includes place names and features. photos, if I click photos, all the photos from Panoramia appear in here. So let's zoom in on this one. Devereaux Point. Should get the web entry for it appearing in just a sec. Well, I guess the person didn't put it there. Well, the network's extremely slow. Ah, here we go. Ah. Oh, boy, back to the Stone Age. So it works for photos. It also works for videos, so YouTube videos and three-dimensional panoramas from a single location. And webcams can be searched in exactly this way. So if you want to find all the live webcams in Isla Vista and Santa Barbara, just turn that layer on and you'll see them. By golly, that's slow. Oh, there we go. Phew. So there's the view from Justin Kane's picture of Devereaux. Let's turn some of these off because they're just slowing it down, obviously. I can put roads on here, in which case the street roads appear. I can turn on 3D buildings, and there are very few in Isla Vista, I notice, but if we move over to the campus, you'll see the 3D models that I talked about a little bit earlier begin to pop up and appear. From above, they look kind of dull, but we can change the view angle either by zooming in on the surface. Eventually, we turn up and are looking sort of at an angle to the surface, or we can change the orientation and the angle up here. We have an ocean button. We can turn on the oceans, which allows you to go into the oceans and look around and see bathymetry and all sorts of other data about the oceans. We have weather data that downloads all the data that comes every day from the weather service, so we can look at radar images, Doppler images, and so on. We have something called a gallery, which is a huge number of different user-contributed things, everything you can imagine, reviews of restaurants, etc., etc. His YouTube. I really hesitate to open a YouTube video during class because you never know what's going to pop up, especially in Isla Vista. I'll turn that off. Here we have global awareness that includes a lot of neat things from National Geographic and so on. So if we go out here, we might see details of here's a Greek Orthodox church and so on. And more, it goes on and on. In fact, some of the more recent things that have been added are things like historical photographs, historical satellite images, so you can go back through time and see what an area looked like 20 or 30 years ago or more. Okay, so these are our principal functions for navigation. One nice thing is if you kind of lightly throw it, you continue in a navigation mode. I don't mean to make everybody feel sick. Helps to zoom out when you're doing this. But we can take a trip from any across the country. You can see the data's coming in rather slowly at this point. Okay, or we can go to a particular location, let's say New York. And you notice that what we do is we zoom out, travel across the country, and then zoom back in again. And now you can see the detail coming in for Manhattan. And all the features begin to pop in one by one. Okay, not necessarily visible here, but in other places you might see, what's that, Botanical Gardens. That's the Woolman Ice Rink. There are other things like that. Okay, so there's the basic navigation tools. It's seen, usually there's so much stuff in New York, it's kind of ridiculous. What I'd like to do now is show you some of these locations. The first one is a video that I think outlined, even though it's a little bit old now, I think it, I need to go into presentation mode. The first one is a video that shows you a little bit about the capabilities of linking Google Earth up with other kinds of functionalities. And this has very loud audio on it, right? Okay, very small video. So here we've got a handheld, a little tiny camera located on a radio-controlled airplane. And it's being used to fly. It's got a GPS on board it as well, so it can be taking photographs, downloading them, and registering them into Google Earth at exactly the same time, so that you can actually watch the flight on Google Earth as your flight mechanism. And they get it pretty... So there's the image they're taking from the plane coming in neighborhood by neighborhood as they fly over the neighborhood. And obviously there's a lot more resolution in their photographs than there is on the ground. So here they zoom in. Get a little bit wobbly because they hit the surf crosswinds now. So now it's an individual house. You can see the driveway, the garbage cans in the side lot, everything. And then that's the view of the camera being caught as it lands back again. So let's see if I can actually stop that. All right. Okay, so we can image in all sorts of ways in the department. We've got students experimenting with registering imagery that's taken from kites, which can be flown behind boats, in this case over coral reefs. We've also got people working on helium balloons and tethering helium balloons and putting Android phone cameras, even stereo cameras, into to do close-range photogrammetry. Okay, I've got a kind of oddball set of things to show. So this is a website called KMZ Links that includes, it just says spectacular satellite imagers around the world. Here's another crop circle. Let's find something of at least a marginal interest. Let's take this beautiful copper mine. So if we click on the KMZ, it should... when I open it, it should associate it with Google Earth. And it didn't. See if it actually launched. So the idea that you can just put KMZs, and KMZ is just a compressed version of KML, anywhere on the web, allows you to go in, get it, and then launch Google Earth as a browser and go to that particular location. Now that I'm there, you can actually use all the navigation tools that I just showed you to move around. So we can zoom in, zoom out. I see the little man popped up. That's kind of nice. If we drag him down to the image at a particular point, let's see if he can go here. That puts your viewpoint in that location and allows you to look out and see what the view would actually look like if you were standing there. Usually on Google Maps or anywhere else in Google Earth, that means that the Google car is driven by, but here that view is coming directly from the 3D rendering of the satellite information. Okay, so let's close that up. Let's find another one. Let me see. Too many crop circles, they're all boring. All right, let's go on to the next thing. A blog website called Google Earth Cool Places is where anybody that goes out and finds something really cool on Google Earth posts it. And again, these things update all the time. So here's somebody posting today. It looks like some kind of containment facility. But here's stuff, the Firefox logo in Oregon. Herd of hippos in Tanzania. Let's go and have a look at that. Five coolest places this month. So I assume this will take us again. So we transfer over to Tanzania now, then Google Earth. Begin to see a lot more National Geographic entries appearing here. And you notice how those images have been registered. Those are much more detailed images been registered to the coarser resolution satellite data. And yes, indeed, we can see a herd of hippos crossing a river. Glad I'm not in the middle of that bunch. And again, we have the navigation capability. Move the image around, tilt it up, zoom in and out. Get pretty close there. Okay. Let's close that up. Now let's go to, here's a couple of places that previously found on Google Earth. Sort of I always save the sort of best of views. So here's somebody that, whoa! So we come into Mount Everest, and somebody's actually identified where there are some climbers on their way up Mount Everest. I'm not seeing them. I see a rope, but I don't see the climbers. Maybe I've got more. Well, I must have better eyes than I do. Now we see the whole range as Mount Everest indeed shown. Okay, so let's continue on our world tour here. Everybody loves Stonehenge, don't ask me why. Everybody's got their own theory about it. So in this case we can, actually in the press recently has been Woodhenge and some other facilities nearby that sort of add context to Stonehenge. Here it is. Here's the parking lot, quite obviously. Well, there's the label. This must have a... This is the link to the World Heritage Sites. We can actually see views. Go back to my page. Now we go off to Paris. Oops, wrong Eiffel Tower. This is Las Vegas. Now, many of the Vegas buildings are rendered in 3D. Wow, that's really slow to render. I hesitate to zoom in here because it will just simply... There we go. Look at all that water in the middle of the desert. And then the last one. I'm not going through Google Earth here directly, but if we enable all the features that we can see on Google Earth, we see the public available webcams, and it's always kind of intriguing to see these on campus. There are actually fewer than there used to be. So here's a live view now looking out at the beach. Somebody just walking back with a surfboard and see each wave coming in and breaking on the wave. So these webcams in real time, they're all posted out. There are several sites that are sort of clearinghouses for webcam images, but those are increasingly accessible through Google Earth. So, all right, so let's just find a couple of places of interest. Let's see, London. We can zoom in and see individual objects like the famous, a lot of them now appearing in 3D. Here's the famous London Eye, the huge Ferris wheel that was put up for the year 2000 that everybody loved so much they didn't take it down again. It's still there and it's still one of the major tourist attractions. That must be kind of late in the day because it's, I know early in the day because it's being illuminated from the east and casting its shadow directly into the river. So again, shadow is one of those things for interpretation. Let me try just one last. I thought I had. No, I missed my last one. Any special requests? Of course. How could it be otherwise? It's relevant because we had Bright Angel Lodge up on here a couple of days ago. Grand Canyon Village. There's the hotels. There's Bright Angel Lodge. That's where you got to stay if you go to the canyon. And we can zoom in. Pivot up. Yep, 3D view. Any other last requests? Boy, you guys are not very geographically curious. Yes.
Maybe we should try Aspen, Colorado.
Is that where you're going for Thanksgiving?
I'd love to.
So you notice that landmarks are showing up, like ski board shops. It begins to give you a hint of what's going on. There's downtown Aspen. Not much 3D in Aspen. One really red roof. That must be an IHOP or something. More requests? Yeah. If you can spell it. AZ?
Yeah, I don't
Somebody's interested in it. It's got a pretty sizable airport.
What's that above the city?
That's the airport.
Even above that, there's like a... See that thing? Or a blue thing?
This? It's like snow. Very unusual snow, though. Okay. So, yeah, one more.
The flight simulator.
I'm not going to go over flight simulator. But you can simulate. You can do flight simulation and download this data into some of the flight simulator programs. Okay, so I would encourage you to do a little bit of virtual travel over your holidays. And we'll reconvene next week. As I said, and I'll echo again, there will be no lecture on Wednesday. You can come, but I won't be here. And have a good Thanksgiving.